Oh my god, an insane goal!
The game's gone mad.
Hello and welcome back to The Game's Gone Mad. This week I'm once again joined by the two Mikes, Michael McCubbin.
Hello.
And Mike Atkins.
Afternoon.
Hi. I didn't call you Matt this time, so that's a win overall. Nice. And this week we are going to be talking about what's going on in the Bundesliga, a little bit about Granit Xhaka's fall from grace at Arsenal, some outrage in Mexico, and the Great British Bake Off.
The game's gone mad.
Okay, so the Bundesliga this season, 9 games in, is absolutely insane. I've got some information down in front of me, but to be honest, you can just look at the table and it tells you everything. 5 points currently separate first place, which is Borussia Mönchengladbach, from 10th place, which is Hoffenheim. And that's despite 7 of those top 10 dropping points at the weekend. It's absolutely staggering. I mean, Gladbach have been on fire so far. Obviously coached by Marco Rosa out of RB Salzburg. They're top of the league, pretty much just pressing everyone relentlessly. XG says they have the second best attack in the league. And their front line, they've got Alassane Player, they've got Marcus Thuram, they've got Braille Mbolo. But they've only got the 7th best defence. And to me, that absolutely sums up the Bundesliga. Like, you have a load of teams who are really good at attack or really good at defence. Like, Wolfsburg are great at defence, but horrible in attack. Nobody's really good at both things. And it's actually making for an incredibly fun start to the season. McCubbs, has anything caught your eye in the early rounds?
I mean, to be honest, I can't claim to have watched that much Bully. But I have been keeping tabs on the table. I mean, obviously, Wolfsburg, like one of only 3 teams in Europe to, or at least in Europe's top 5 leagues, to remain unbeaten, along with Juve and Liverpool, I believe. Juve didn't lose on the weekend, did they? So, so that's like, clearly that's pretty impressive. But yeah, Gladbach like look really good. I guess you'd kind of expect it with Marco Rose, but like for them to have kind of kicked on this well this quickly is pretty good to see. Like 19 goals, 9 against as well, like pretty good. And obviously Schalke, I think I'm pretty happy for Schalke actually, because I think David Wagner obviously, you know, had a bit of a tough time of it towards the end at Huddersfield, but you know, still a very good manager. And you know, it's quite a step up to go from Huddersfield to Schalke. Obviously, he'd worked at, you know, at good clubs in Germany before, just not in a kind of managerial sense. They've clearly been just much better this season, and clearly taking to his methods quite quickly as well. So yeah, I don't know. That's nice to see. Obviously, they're 7th at the moment, but again, like still 4 points off top, level with Bayer Leverkusen and Leipzig. Like, it's a pretty good place to be for a club that were, you know, staring at relegation last season.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But I mean, Bayern, are kind of the story here, because you'd assume that normally, like, maybe it would be close from 2 to 10. But the fact that Bayern are in second and are very much in the middle of this is kind of surprising, right? Like, they spent a lot of money in the summer. Obviously brought in Coutinho, Perisic, a little bit less exciting. But then the work they did on their back line might have been a little bit unnecessary, but it was very, very good. And they were running teams over, playing Kimmich in midfield earlier in the season. But now there are some injuries.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. Like, Bayern Munich, I'm not sure if they've even been top at all this season. I don't think they have. Or maybe not beyond sort of the first 2 or 3 games.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy that the whole table, there's just no consistency at all from anyone. So if you win a game and you go up to second, like Dortmund, they beat Mönchengladbach, they go up to second, and then they drop points and they're back down to 6th.
Yeah.
So it's just so crazy that you can't really, I feel like you can't really take anything from the table as it stands at the moment, because everyone's sort of taking points off of everyone else, and no team is yet to find that consistency. Like, you're talking about Wolfsburg being the one of 3 unbeaten teams in Europe this season, you know, 1-4, drawn 5. Last night in the League Cup in Germany, with a relatively strong team, they lost 6-1 to Leipzig. Because it's so early in the season, you're yet to see, you know, they usually say it takes 10 games, and once you've played the 10 games, you can sort of gauge where teams are.
Yeah.
I think they've played 9. You can't really gauge what some of these teams are. Like, what the hell are Freiburg doing up in third place?
Yeah, Freiburg are all over the shop. Like, I have no idea how good Freiburg are, but except that I know they're not this good. Like, this is the thing. I think of these 10 teams,
yes,
I think we can rule out as truly good. Like Schalke have improved a lot, but Schalke are not going to end up above, like, Bayer Leverkusen. They're not going to end up on the same points as Leipzig. Mm. So I would probably rule out Freiburg, Wolfsburg, Schalke, and Hoffenheim as being not quite as interesting as the others. But then you've got Leverkusen, who are playing, like, the most insane Petter Bosch ball. Like, they're playing like, we press and
expect.
Press and press and press and press, and we massively outshoot our opponents. But the shots that we concede are, like, practically on the goal line, because it's when somebody has managed to play through our press. And Eintracht are doing a really interesting job as well. Like, obviously having lost Haller and Jovic in the summer. They've now got Paciencia, who seems to be killing it up front for them. But to me, I still think that there are four great teams here. And there's Gladbach, Bayern, Borussia Dortmund, and Leipzig.
Yeah, I'd agree. To be
but
fair.
I have no idea what to predict. You know, I would predict Bayern, okay. According to expected goal, they do have the best goal difference. They've got plus 13 goal difference, which after nine games is pretty healthy.
Yeah.
They've got, according to XG, the best attack and third best defence in the league. But because of those centre-back injuries, they're now probably going to have to move Pavard from right-back into centre-back, which means Kimmich going from DM to right-back. Mm. Or you could try Martinez at centre-back. But one way or another, Martinez is going to be a centre-back or a DM. It's a little bit troubling.
Yeah, it's weird how when they made all the business in the summer, we were like, why are they strengthening their defence? They've already got a really good defence. And now it looks like, despite all this influx of like Hernandez and Pavard, that their defence is exactly where it was last season. And in terms of depth, like obviously they sold Hummels, but in terms of depth, like one player gets injured and they've got to shuffle everything around. They've got to find the players to fit the roles. And I mean, their defence is still pretty questionable. I think against Augsburg they drew 2-2.
They did.
After throwing away
loads of big chances.
After throwing away a 2-0 lead. And I heard someone, it might have been on Twitter or on a different podcast or something like that, but apparently Bayern Munich fans used to, when it sort of ticked over to 90 minutes, it used to be sort of 2 minutes up, 3 minutes up, whatever, and it'd be like, oh well, that's just the referees showing mercy on the other team. But now when they put up 2 minutes, 3 minutes, it's like, good, at least the opposition won't score now.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, this is perhaps why we're seeing rumours linking Bayern and actually Dortmund with Jose Mourinho. McCubs, as a United fan, what do you think about
that? It seems madness, doesn't it?
I mean, he's not the only
to be fair, Bayern, I could actually see it more with Bayern. I think Borussia Dortmund seems like a very odd fit for Jose Mourinho, like relatively young side. I don't know, the side that's very much brought into kind of Favre's vision and whatnot. Bayern, like, I guess just as a, you know, Hollywood FC, you just kind of expect him to be linked there all the time. But I don't see Mourinho going to the Bundesliga full stop. I just don't think it's his fit, is it? Like, clubs in the Bundesliga pride themselves on being sensible and being sustainable, you know, this, that and the other. And you know, Mourinho just isn't that. Could you imagine Mourinho trying to, like, you know, work with the Bayern hierarchy? It was just it would be awful. It would be so bad. Cannot. Imagine Mourinho having to go to the Oktoberfest thing they do and getting like the lederhosen and stuff.
No, that would actually be. Oh no, I want it to happen. That would be amazing.
But like, it would be great to see. But I just don't. I just think it would. It would just be. It would just look so out of place.
But the thing is, I don't. Okay. I don't think that Dortmund are that different from a Mourinho side, a good Mourinho side, because like they play quite dull. We're used to thinking of them as exciting because like their attackers are really good, and so as a result they do score quite a lot of goals. But when you actually watch them play, you're like, they're quite conservative. They're a Favre team. Like, his Gladbach were conservative, Nice was conservative, and now Dortmund are kind of conservative. And I feel like Mourinho's teams at their best were like pretty conservative with just elite attackers doing their thing. And so in a way, there's a part of me, if it weren't for the fact that he would obviously demand like some say over transfers, blah blah blah, there's a part of me that kind of thinks, the Dortmund squad's not that badly set up for you, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they are a counter-attacking side, aren't they? But I don't know, it just doesn't feel right in terms of the way that kind of Dortmund, like the kind of image of Dortmund, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. But having said that, it would be a great story if you know, Mourinho was to kind of rebirth himself there.
Do you not feel like there's a bit of a disconnection between Dortmund managers and recruitment at the moment? Because I think they still recruit like they're an exciting, progressive side. But then their managers, you know, like they got in Stöger after sacking Boss.
Yeah, that was an odd one.
Then they got in Favre, and it's just like, and now the link with Mourinho, like that might not be their fault. That might just be paper talk. But at the same time, you think, this does not feel like Marco Rosa going to Gladbach. That feels like the kind of thing that you'd expect Dortmund to do. And yet instead, they're playing it a little bit safe. Yeah.
I mean, Favre had a good record of developing youth talent, though,
he did.
So I guess that, you know, might play into why.
It's more,
you know,
stylistic, I think, is my issue. Like, I just think, I'm not really sure. I think of Dortmund as like a kind of run and gun attacking side. Like, that's what they were under Tuchel. It's what they were under Klopp. And now I feel like they're moving away from that. And in Bayern's case, I don't really know what Bayern are anymore. And I think that after a while, it gets hard to recruit if you're going to, like, let... if you're going to basically not if you're not going to recruit managers in a certain style, it gets harder to recruit players in a certain style after a while, I think.
Yeah, but going back to Dortmund, do you not think like some of the issue with Dortmund is that rest of Europe has sort of twigged on to what Dortmund are doing in terms of their coaching setup beyond the first team? So whenever you see a championship job become available, a lower league, Premier League job, probably France, other clubs in Germany as well, their second team manager is always the one like at the top of the frame. Like you look at obviously Tuchel went on to the main job and then he went off. Daniel Farker, David Wagner, they came from the Dortmund setup.
Yeah, and the other guy that Huddersfield hired after sacking Wagner.
Yeah, I know who you mean. I can't remember.
He was out of Dortmund. Jan Sievert, was it?
That's the one.
He came out of Dortmund as well, right?
Yeah, and it's almost like they want to have this progression through their club, but they almost can't because other clubs are cottoning onto that and taking the coaches before they can, you know, make that step up to the first team. Mm. And whenever they get sack a manager or whatever, this new second team manager probably isn't ready to sort of take that step from the second team to the first team.
That's an interesting point, actually. I haven't thought about that. But I also think, like, look, I see why you wouldn't sack Favre in the summer.
Yeah.
Like, after a good season last year where they almost won the title. But I also think that sometimes people make decisions about whether a manager should be sacked or not purely on the basis of, like, has that manager done an okay job? And I think sometimes you need to make a decision based on how good you think other managers are. So if you think there's a guy coming up like Marco Rosa and you think he's a really special talent, then even if your manager hasn't necessarily deserved to go, sometimes you should think, no, actually the sensible thing though for the club is to... Like, so for instance...
That's what Southampton did, wasn't it? Famously with Pochettino.
Like, yeah, and with Adkins as well, actually, who'd done a great job bringing him up. The same story, but from different angles. Mm. But yeah, I think... So for instance, if Valverde won the league with Barcelona this season, you could imagine people being like, well, you can't sack him, he won the league. But say you think that Erik ten Hag at Ajax is like the perfect fit for you stylistically, is a really good manager, is going to come in and like make you the best team in the world again. Then actually it becomes, the sensible thing becomes to sack your manager who's done an okay job. And I'm not saying they should sack Favre necessarily, because I think, you know, XG rates them as fourth best team in the league. They're currently fifth. Like, they're going to finish in the top four. They've had some injuries, like Brandt, Paco Alcácer, Witzel all spent time out. But I would still look at them and be like, can we not be better than this? Like who has the worst... If you look at those four teams that we named, Gladbach, Leipzig, Dortmund and Bayern, it seems pretty clear to me that the traditional two probably have the two least exciting and potentially least talented managers of the four.
Yeah, and yeah, I get that. But sure, then the issue is, if they were, I know what you're saying about Dortmund seem like a Mourinho team in a sense.
Sure.
In a sense.
Like a 2011 Mourinho team.
Yeah, but then you can't imagine Dortmund offering Mourinho the job in the way that Dortmund are sort of perceived on the world stage now.
Look,
I'm
seeing him linked to Arsenal right now, so I will take anybody getting him off the dole so that we can't hire him.
And you say that with, it's something you've been saying with Arsenal to an extent as well, is that if Dortmund did get rid of Favre, then who would they go for? Who would step up and then make Dortmund in the image that the Dortmund hierarchy sees the club and that the fans see the club?
Yeah, I think it's always going to be a bit of a risk, isn't it? Because, I mean, as much as there's better talent out there than Favre to manage Dortmund potentially, you're still taking that risk whereby you're taking a manager who's clearly, you know, pretty popular with the fans, popular with the players, and kind of making that transition. And even though, like, say, you know, the credentials of a certain manager match up better with the talent that's there, I don't know, there's a kind of, yeah, there's always going to be that kind of cultural shift, and whether the players are actually going to respond well to, you know, the manager that they, you know, that they respect being sacked despite generally getting good results. There's always going to be a kind of risk factor of like that, you know, it could actually go tits up with whoever you bring in.
Plus, I think there's language. Mm. Like, normally, like, when people talk about language barrier, I normally don't think that much about it, because you're like, you can get to a working level in a language genuinely in like 3 or 4 months, I think. Like, especially if you're having lessons and you're living in the country. Unless you're Unai Emery, yeah. People are still saying like, oh, well, you know, he's doing his best. It's like, he's been here over a year. Like, you can get good at a language very quickly. Like, I'm not sure I understand that. But
Football's a universal language, Pat.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot. The universal language of football. Yeah, but I was kind of thinking about that with Emery, because, like, if you were to sack Emery in mid-season, you don't necessarily want to take a gamble even though the best manager available might be somebody who doesn't speak English, and bringing that person in mid-season when clearly communication issues are a problem and they've got to hit the ground running, that is kind of a thing. So if Mourinho doesn't speak German, which I'm pretty certain he doesn't, you can't really imagine bringing him in like October, knowing that he needs to get his message over to players instantaneously. You know, because otherwise, like a Pablo Machine would be great for Dortmund. But if he doesn't speak German, then you might see the process of adaptation to his methods delayed by 2 months, 3 months, four months.
You say if he doesn't speak German, but I imagine that in Germany, when they bring in the foreign managers, you probably find the language in the dressing room is probably English.
Maybe, but for really complicated technical stuff, like I agree overall. I imagine that a lot, like my experience of Germans is obviously like they tend to speak pretty good English. Yeah. And I imagine you could have like a good conversation in English with a lot of the German players. But there's a difference between that and explaining to them like how to use their cover shadow so that the centre-back can't pass into the number six. You know,
you're speaking English and I don't know what you're on about.
Exactly. It's the kind of thing I've read online. But I don't know. I would love Gladbach or Leipzig to go on and win the league.
I mean, I think the point here is don't want Bayern Munich to go on and win the league again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, but I wouldn't mind seeing Mainz winning it.
Mainz?
I mean, obviously they're down 13th. The top. Union Berlin, FC Köln, just anyone who's not Bayern to actually win the league. That's why,
it'll be great.
I know it's a completely different country, but that's why Serie A is a bit more entertaining this season, because it looks like Inter might actually topple Juventus at the top of Serie A.
You're just rooting for chaos, basically.
I'm just rooting for not the norm.
It's what these leagues need. The top five leagues in Europe have never been as formulaic as they are now, history.
Was
it like the first season that all five
winners... First season
winners,
in history that all five winners of the big five leagues...
Were repeat winners.
And it could happen... I mean, yeah, it could happen three times. If City win and...
If the favourites win again this year, it'll be three then it's the set, three in a row for the big five leagues.
And, you know, PSG are going to win.
Yeah.
That's kind of the only nailed on one, though.
It's true, yeah.
That's the thing. There's a lot of upheaval all over Europe. And, you know, the Premier League is an absolute mess. But the Bundesliga is carnage as well. I mean, Leipzig, I think, it's maybe not this season for Leipzig.
No.
But what we've been saying last season and the season before.
True. And if Werner goes...
The season, when they finish second after being promoted, it's like, well, it is their first season in the Bundesliga. Yeah. And next season, they can mount the challenge.
If Werner goes, they basically have to get Haaland in, is how I look at it. Because if Werner goes and Haaland goes somewhere else... I don't see how they have anything other than a big step back.
I don't even know who their backup is.
Well, they've played Nkunku in an attacking role. They've played Cunha there this season. They've got Yusuf Poulsen.
Oh, yeah, Cunha, yeah.
Like, they've got a bunch of guys. But, I don't know. There's nobody there who's ready to... Well, Nkunku currently is at, 1.11 expected goals and assists per 90, but he's only played about 300 minutes. Timo Werner is at 1.19, which is genuinely outrageous. And he's massively underperforming expected goals. Despite having a lot of goals. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty exciting. But yeah, I do feel like you lose Werner, and I just don't see how things continue to progress at the same rate.
They've got to do it this season then, haven't they?
Well, they do, because I put a tenner on them to do it. And a couple of weeks after I put it on, it was like I could cash out for 14 quid, but now I can only cash out for like £8.60. So,
oh, right. It's been dwindling.
It's been quite upsetting. So, I mean, okay, so if we look with your head, not your heart, who do you think is going to win the Bundesliga? McCubs?
Bayern.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be hard to disagree with that. Because even when you look at last season, and there was the battle between Dortmund just stretched out, 5-point, 8-point lead or something like that by November, December. There's always in the back of your head was, but Bayern can still do this. And then Bayern ended up winning it by a counter.
Yeah, but also I also think though, Bayern were better than they looked in the table, and Dortmund were worse than they looked in the table. Whereas the pessimist in me says Bayern as well.
Yes,
but I also think we've got to wait and see how this affects them, like this change of formation or change of lineup, because their midfield with Coutinho, Thiago, and Kimmich playing together was so perfectly balanced and was really really fun. And without Kimmich there, I don't really back Martinez to be able to do the same job, even though I like having Martinez.
Sure.
I don't see how having and even with Kimmich there, they had some defensive permeability, right? So if they have a downgrade on Zula as well, they don't have Hernandez there, then I do think, okay, this is a team that can be got at. And I think teams will be... And the Bundesliga is not one of those leagues where teams go to Bayern and are respectful of them. Like, Augsburg were like, we're going to take it to Bayern, and deserved at least the 2-2 draw, possibly more.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Do you think Kovac or Favre are going to be sacked?
I think Kovac is probably more likely. But, I mean, I don't think it would happen before the end of the season, unless their form really takes a dip, unless they like drop out of the top four or whatever.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, fun. I mean, I can't see Favre being sacked, but Kovac, I feel like if
Bayern another sacking.
If Bayern are off the pace.
Good Christmas sacking.
Then even with under Ancelotti was doing a fine job. He was hardly doing badly when he was sacked.
Lost the dressing room though, hadn't he?
Yeah, he lost the dressing room. And has Kovac got the dressing room?
I don't know. I think there are fewer people there now,
and you've also got
who
to
are going to cause trouble.
And you've also got to consider that this is the last season of... I'm pretty sure it's the last season of Hoeneß and Rummenigge.
Oh, really?
I think... Or one of them. I think one of them is retiring.
Oliver Carr's coming in eventually, but is it that soon?
I think one of them is retiring at the end of the season.
Intriguing.
So will they want to get rid of Kovac, bring in Mourinho to give it one last shot at, you know, this is my last season, we are winning the league?
Oh my God.
I couldn't think of a worse thing for Bayern to do than bring in Mourinho. It'd just be awful.
But Bayern have just gradually been cementing themselves as like there was a point right at the beginning of the season where their numbers were so good that you were like, they're maybe in the next rank for the Champions League. Like, you've got City, Liverpool, PSG, and probably Bayern there as well. And now I'm just like, there's zero chance. I don't think they'll win the Champions
League. Just want to clarify. So Hoeneß is not standing as president at the election at the end of the season.
Okay.
So he's effectively retiring from his position at Bayern this year.
They're a mess, man. But I think that's for the best, because Hoeneß and Rummenigge are just like, they're like bitchy players. Like, they come out and talk to the press all the time.
I mean, there's that thing recently with the whole Neuer to Stegen sort of standoff. It's like, well, you drop Neuer, none of our players are going to play for Germany again.
Yeah, that is just...
Shut up.
Unbelievable.
It's really hard not to root against Bayern, basically. It's what we've come down to here. Mm. But all we want, Mönchengladbach, good season. Marco Rosa to Arsenal next summer. Yeah? Everyone on board with that?
Yeah. I think I will round off by saying I wouldn't mind seeing Bayern Munich win the league if it's a fun title race.
Yeah.
Like, I'm more of a fan of football than not a fan of Bayern Munich.
I get that.
Like, if it's enjoyable and fun, don't really care.
You just love the sport, don't you?
To me, the measure of the league is now that, like, in the past, you would basically watch Dortmund-Bayern in the Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, I can imagine, like, 10 or 15 different games in the Bundesliga that I think, yeah, I'll put that on. Like, if Gladbach are playing, like, Eintracht, I'd be like, yeah, I'll probably watch that.
Yeah,
that sounds great. Like, so, I don't know. It feels like the league is getting healthier, but by virtue of none of the top clubs being very good.
And that's always kind of what the Bundesliga has kind of prided itself on a little bit anyway, is the kind of level playing field of it.
Yeah.
Like, they always kind of say, oh, you know, the great thing is that, you know, you can go down to the Zweite Bundesliga, and actually there are five or six teams in the Zweite Bundesliga who could actually compete in the Bundesliga. There's a kind of equality element, which I guess, you know, feeds into the whole kind of fan ownership and everything like that. So, yeah, it's kind of what this kind of table is kind of what you'd expect a quintessential Bundesliga to look like, despite Bayern having dominated it so ridiculously over the last 10 years. And, you know, I guess that's why everyone hates them so much, because they're the antithesis of all of that.
The game's gone mad.
On to our headlines, and our first one is that Arsenal are going to offer counselling to Granit Xhaka after he was booed by his own fans. Of course, this was after the 2-2 draw against Crystal Palace at the Emirates, rather, at the weekend, when Xhaka was booed off the pitch. Now, I don't think this is quite as simple a story as it's been made out to be. Mm. Like, there were a couple of ironic cheers when his number went up, but then it was because he, like, trotted off the pitch really slowly. Yeah. All the boos built. So he tears off the armband, throws it on the ground, cups a hand to his ear, like Hulk Hogan, and then tells the fans to fuck off. Which is, like, not great, because he's the club captain. And also the fallout afterwards. I mean, Lucas Torreira looked like he was crying on the sideline, got a hug from Emery, which probably wasn't fun. Alex Lacazette seemed pissed off with Xhaka and has subsequently liked an Instagram post. Where he was like, fuck off Emery and Xhaka. And then Xhaka changed his profile picture on Instagram from a picture of him wearing an Arsenal shirt to a picture of him wearing a Switzerland shirt.
Oh, nice. Fancy.
And there are rumours now as well that he's been asked to apologise to fans and he said no.
I was about to bring that up. I mean, he's usually after this, players make an apology pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think they're the club.
And I think it's more telling. And I'm not trying to sort of take anything away from necessarily the emotions of of that moment or anything like that. But it's quite telling that there's been another game. Arsenal have played another game since then.
Yeah.
And he's not said anything.
Yeah.
He's just not said anything. Like, I can't remember if you mentioned it, but like even players went to his house the other day just to make sure he was all right.
Yeah. Senior players apparently, apparently there was basically a plan where they were like, we're probably going to fine him and strip him of the captaincy. And now there are rumours that the hierarchy have had to reconsider that because they're like, he's in a bad way. Because it's not the first time he's been booed by the fans. And as an Arsenal fan, obviously I worry because firstly, I just think it's bad behaviour. And secondly, you think you're not going to be able to attract players if you're booing your own players all the time. However, you are a professional football player. You get abused a lot. Like, what did he expect? And why was he trotting off the pitch? Like, don't get me wrong. I can understand him being, like, outraged. But you lose the moral high ground the minute that you're like, fuck off.
Yeah, and I think he'd had enough before he, you know, trotted off the pitch. I think that was it. I think it's the accumulation. Obviously, like, you know, was it his Instagram comments on his Instagram posts have had to be disabled for the last, like, year because they've been so awful and his, you know, his wife has received, like, threats from Arsenal fans and stuff. It's just madness. I mean, like, maybe I'm a bit biased. I'm very much on the Xhaka's side generally in this, but I think that's maybe just because I find Arsenal fans incredibly annoying.
Yeah, they are.
But yeah, I think, it's just an accumulation of that. So it's almost like this was just going to happen at some point. Like, the way that Arsenal's form has been, it was just going to happen at some point. And I don't know. I think if I was Xhaka, just get out of there, man. Like, just push for a transfer in January.
Bro,
like,
we'd
just,
love
just
to sell it. well, Emery wouldn't. That's another issue, right? Which is that Xhaka didn't make himself captain.
Yeah.
He doesn't pick himself every week. He just... And in this game, he hadn't even had, like, a notably bad game. It wasn't like the Spurs match, you know, where he just, like, slid in the box and gave away a penalty because he's a moron.
I mean, that was jokes, to be fair.
That was so stupid. Yeah. But in this game, he's just, like, his normal, like, mediocre self. Like, there's no particular reason for animus against him.
I think I saw a tweet which summed up the situation perfectly. It's just something as simple as, the problem is a fool made a fool the captain.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. And, but then I think that there's an issue here as well, right? Which is that if you're the club hierarchy, I think you've got to look at it and say, this is not just criticism of Xhaka, but this is implicit criticism of Emery. Right, fans are booing a guy who is probably more closely associated with the manager than with any other player at the club. Yeah. And he's the one who fans are like, should not be playing. But Emery picks him week in, week out, regardless of form, regardless of opponent, like always wants to play him. He made him captain, and he made him captain after dicking around for a long time, not picking a captain, and then made the players vote anyway. So it just feels like, I don't know, like I now feel like a player. It's not dissimilar to late period Mourinho blaming players for his own failings. In that, I'm not saying Emery's blamed him, but this is now a guy who's essentially dealing with the fact that the manager is incredibly unpopular among the fans.
Yes. Yeah, and I think also, I mean, with the game last night, Arsenal-Liverpool, it also showed like the animosity from the fans towards the club when Mesut Ozil had a fantastic game.
Yeah.
Why he was subbed off, we'll never know.
Because we were winning probably, by one goal.
Probably because he was...
Having conceded four already, he was like, well, there can't possibly be another goal in this fucking game.
Probably slightly
let's get Ozil off and sit on the lead.
I saw that the chants from the Arsenal fans were sort of super Mesut Ozil. He's Arsene Wenger's man.
Yeah, we've got Mesut Ozil. And
the turnaround on that is crazy.
He's Arsene Wenger's man.
Yeah, it's just...
It's mental. Receive.
Yeah, so many fans hate Ozil. Like, genuinely hate him. But he's now become like...
The grand unifier.
Yeah, he's like
of Arsenal fans.
He's like people. It's the same way that like everybody will vote for like, you know, whoever runs against Trump. All the normies will vote for whoever runs against Trump, regardless of how much of a dick that person is, even if it's Biden. Just because you're like,
he's not.
It's
Trump.
Evil.
No.
And that's what's going on with Emery. He's pure evil, ruining my club. Anyway, moving on. There's been outrage in Mexico as well as in North London this week after Tigres beat Veracruz 3-1. Now, Veracruz were protesting the fact that they haven't been paid in months. So they started the game by standing stock still. They said they were going to do this for 3 minutes. Now, during that time, Tigres went and scored 2 goals through Edu Vargas and André Pierre Gignac, who were a real blast
forgot about
the past them. There. And eventually, Veracruz started playing... But then Vargas scored another one, so Veracruz were 3-0 down. And then Later on, Tigres had somebody sent off, and Veracruz got a consolation through Colin Kazim Richards.
Forgot about him.
Yeah, I know, right? But they were absolutely furious after the match. So I'm not really sure here what you're obliged to do as an opposing team, because Tigres stood still for a minute as well, or didn't play properly for a minute as well, in order to kind of show solidarity with their opponents. And then we're like, okay, we'll do a minute. We're not going to do like three. Well, we might as well just do the first half.
Mm.
Right, so what do you think here? Like, is this like bad form from players?
What from Tigres?
Yeah,
I think it's bad organization. I think they like, surely, like, if you're going to protest, and I think, you know, they're perfectly right to protest, right? But from Tigres, like, clearly there was a lack of communication between the two sides, right? Like what they should have done was like got together and been like, we're all going to stand still, or like we're all going to just basically get the game abandoned. Like, surely that's the only way to do it. Like,
I feel like Veracruz as well are like blaming Tigres for their own failings, mm-hmm. right? Because one of the goals, I think it's the first goal, is like just sort of like punted towards goal by a midfielder. Like, after a
keeper
striker
could easily stop it.
Yeah, after a striker refused to take a shot, and the keeper could have just put a foot out and stopped it.
Yeah, but
he was like, no, I'm protesting. So he let it go in, and then they're like, how dare you score against us? It's like, what?
Yeah, you
what,
can't really have your cake and eat it.
What am I meant
sense,
to do, man?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And the same with the second goal that Gignac scored. Apparently, this is a quote from Gignac after the game, that he was trying to put it out for a goal kick. But then when you watch the highlight, it's from about 30 yards and it's dead in the centre of the goal.
Mm.
And it's just like, are you, I mean,
he's not a very good striker.
The thing is,
or
like,
maybe he's just so lethal. He was like, I tried to put it wide, but I just can't help but put it in the onion bag.
The whole thing was just a bit awkward to watch, to see the highlights, because you just watch the first 3 minutes of the match, and it's like Veracruz kick off, immediately just kick it to Tigres.
Why? Then, yeah, they should have kicked off and just stayed with the ball.
And then they just stood there, and then Tigres are just sort of like passing it about between themselves, like doing some sort of training drill. Almost passing around cones sort
fun.
Of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then one of them played a through ball to the striker, and the striker was one-on-one with the keeper. I was like, hold on, I can't really score here. So he turned back, passed it back to his midfielder, and his midfielder just blasted it top corner. Like, it's just like, it was just all very...
That's bizarre.
It was all very weird to watch, and just...
It's so bizarre.
And like, you could see the faces of like the Veracruz team. It's just like, we've conceded here, but we can't really... We're trying to make a point. But they can't really play.
But they do need the points. Like, they're bottom of the table. They've got 4 points from 12. And this has been months now of them not getting paid. And I'm not sure. I don't know. In a way, maybe this is better, because all the controversy over it means that now there's going to be more publicity for their protest. Sure. But essentially the Tigres captain said, they told us it was going to be a minute. Then they told us just before it kicked off that it was going to be 3 minutes. I went and asked some of the Veracruz players, and they didn't know it was going to be 3 minutes. They found out from me. One of the Veracruz players was like, they knew. They knew it was going to be 3 minutes long. But I was saying to Matkins earlier, strange. Like, to me, this just feels like a kind of exploitable situation. Because say this was at the end of the season and goal difference was a factor, you could imagine like going away to Man City and being like, guys, we're going to have a 10-minute protest at the beginning of this game. Where we just all stand still and we don't play football, just so you know. Just because then, like, you know, it's less time that you have to defend against Man City in. I don't know. It just feels silly.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be interested to see what's going on with the fans. Like, are fans protesting these games as well? Are they, like, boycotting these games? Like,
I don't know that information.
Yeah, but I mean...
Probably.
Yeah, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it would make sense. The fans are reasonably pissed off.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess it just... depends on that. But yeah, I mean, we're speaking about it on a podcast in the UK, so
exactly.
That's a good sign.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. Let's send them our salaries.
Well,
let's not do that. Let's send them Chris Hamill's salary.
Not earning enough.
The game's gone mad.
Finally, we move on to anything but football, and there's even more controversy in the final of the Great British Bake Off, which is what we are talking about this week. I will have no other topic named. David was crowned champion of the Great British Bake Off, the 10th Great British Bake Off, after a strong showing in the final. 36-year-old from Whitby, bit old, his legs are probably gone, but still good.
Yeah.
He'd not actually been named Star Baker once in the run-up to the
final.
Alice had won it twice, Steph had won it four times. Steph was the prohibitive favourite, but had a meltdown. Her twice-baked Stilton soufflés were a disgrace. And then her cake looked a bit dry. When it didn't come out, my wife went, that's dry. And it was apparently dry and also flavourless. So really disappointing to see the favourite not play to her normal standard going into the final. But, you know, disappointing. Champions League final was disappointing as well. And this very much
akin
to it. You guys are big fans of the Great British Bake Off.
I I have a girlfriend who watches it religiously, and that's sort of where my association with it ends. So I actually went to her for some opinions on this.
Okay, good.
And what she said was that throughout the course, Steph, one who won like the most star bakers, like
four star bakers. She won three consecutive star bakers.
A series record.
Is that the first since like Henri or something?
Basically, it's
basically equivalent to 20 goals, 20 assists. And that she was the clear favourite coming into the final. But she always enjoyed David. She wanted David to win of the three, which you don't seem happy about that, Pat.
No. I think I agree with her that Alice, not a fan.
Yeah, she was always a bit put off by her.
She's a ponytail flapper. Like, you know, like she's always like tossing her ponytail and it irritated me. And she's also like a grown woman, but she's got that like sort of teenage girl vibe a little bit.
Alice, was it?
Yeah.
Okay, because I don't know any of the names, by the way. I don't watch the British Bake Off, but I did watch about half an hour of it. And I thought Steph might have been Alice, but actually I think it's Alice.
No, Steph has got very heavy fringe
and
weeps a lot.
Oh, no, maybe it's Steph, because I remember watching this half hour and she was like clearly the best baker. But at the same time, it wasn't surprising to hear that she had a meltdown, because I kind of thought maybe she doesn't have the big game mentality that's needed to get over the line.
I'll tell you, you know what? That's exactly what it was. Like she's got all the raw ability, but she just didn't have she couldn't grind out results when she was playing badly.
Mm.
So like David was like very consistent, just like plodding along. Whereas Steph was like, she was just like a comet. She like shone briefly and then disappeared and just burnt herself out. But it was actually quite an unpopular series, this one.
I was going to say, because I did actually see one episode this series.
Intriguing.
And things that my girlfriend told me sort of played onto what I saw. There was a lot of crying.
Yeah.
A lot of crying.
There was.
Like usually I remember seeing some of the older series and it's sort of I don't know who hosted it back in the day.
Mary Berry. Mel and Sue.
So if something went wrong, it would happen very rarely that something would go wrong. And then sort of Mel would come over and say, oh, you're doing all right.
And
you
it
need
was
any help.
Sick when something went wrong as well, because everyone was like, oh, shit. Like, I can't believe he threw his cake in the bin. What a bell end.
Whereas this series, it seems like a lot of stuff went wrong.
I think it's quite demanding, though. I think, like, as time's gone on, because they have, like, a signature challenge where there's, like, you know, like, oh, make a chocolate cake. That's what it was in the final. Then a technical challenge, which is, like, a challenge that they haven't seen before. They've just been told to do this thing. And it's always really obscure, right? Because it's got to be something that, like, why would you have done this?
Yeah.
But in the first seasons, those were, like, make, like, a croque en bouche, which is, like, you know, like, the profiterole tower or whatever. And now it's like, make this medieval suet pudding.
And I was going to say the same thing.
Of course they're not going to do a good job.
And it loses people like me, although I never really watched it. It loses people like me who, like, I want to see how they make a Jaffa cake.
I know, right?
I want to see how they make a mini roll, or like the perfect chocolate gâteau or something like that.
This is why it was good in the final that the signature was a chocolate cake. Because I was like, yeah, just say to someone, make a chocolate cake. They can do anything with that. Mm. But everyone can do it to some extent. Like, it's not going to be like, I don't want to see a cake where you're like, wow, that's just like totally exploded. It's garbage. You want them to do well. And it just feels like, but I wonder as well, if this was the youngest season they've ever had of the Bake Off. And I wonder if the tears were partially a result of the fact that the young people probably see this as a passport to a different career. Like in the past, a lot of these people have gone on to become presenters or to write cookbooks or to start supper clubs or whatever it might be. Whereas the old people are like, I'm like 75. I'm not going to start a career as a chef now. I'm doing this because I like to bake. Mm. And as a result, they're a little bit more even keeled when something goes wrong. Whereas the young people are all like, shit, I was going to be a professional baker and now I'm going to have to go back and be like an accountant.
Bake Off.
Yeah, because like Mary, because like poor Hollywood said that my cake was dry. But like Prue as well, Prue Leith, who replaced Mary Berry, she's like exceptionally unwarm. Like, she will just say, like,
she's like the opposite to Mary Berry.
I don't know, because Mary Berry, people love Mary Berry, but Mary Berry's not that warm either. I always feel like Mary Berry's like, can you leave me alone? Like, I just want a garden.
On sort of a side note, a very brief side note, I'm not sure if you've seen any of Mary Berry's cooking shows on the BBC.
I have.
She ruins those dishes. Absolutely ruins them.
Okay, I'll say.
Like, she'll go off to Italy, she'll watch them make a nice carbonara, and then she'll make her own carbonara. And just completely disregard everything about this Michelin star chef. Who's
She'll make it
with white sauce as opposed to eggs.
It's like, she's very old school English cook, and so she'll make like an English cook's version of it, rather than being like, I'm going to make an authentic one.
Yeah, she'll make a carbonara. It's like, I don't throw in that little bit of extra taste. I'm going to put some grapes in there. It's like, you don't put grapes.
Yeah,
in,
it's very strange.
It's just completely off the scale. She
is old as hell,
just
though.
Stick to baking.
But at least with her, I don't know, I at least like her. With Prue, Pooh reminds me of my grandmother a bit, partially because she's from Zambia or Zimbabwe or something. Like, okay. My grandmother who's from Zimbabwe, and she's also like just not that friendly or nice. And she would just try. I always think this is an issue with reality shows overall. Not the presenter, but like the judge, I guess. They're kind of required to act as if they've been personally insulted by someone's failure. So when they eat a cake, I'm like, look, if it's like a raw piece of meat, I can understand you being annoyed. But when someone makes you a cake and they're like, oh, it's quite lemony, but it's not quite lemony enough, then you can't really be arsy about that. And they just go, that's actually really dry and like not delicious. Or, and yeah, you're like, all right, Jesus, like they've made you a cake, shut up.
Like criticising the flavour combinations when you're like, hold on a second, but I like that flavour combination.
And it's this cake.
It's not my fault you don't like this.
Yeah.
I would bake that for me at home and I would like it.
That's bollocks as well. Like, whenever somebody makes something with matcha in it, Paul Hollywood's just like, oh, I don't really like matcha. And you're like, shut up, bro. I don't like salmon, but if someone makes me salmon, I'm going to be like, I can still tell if it's a good version of salmon. And I'm also not going to be like, before I try it, FYI, I hate salmon. I tell them in advance so they wouldn't cook me salmon.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable thing. I think with Bake Off as well, its success was always... it's like wholesomeness, right? Like in a similar way to like reason why I think Strictly Come Dancing has outlasted X Factor and did better than X Factor was because it was wholesome and it was like, you know, there was this kind of like family friendly, but also just like everyone was quite supportive of each other.
Yeah.
You know, on Strictly, I guess you had the kind of pantomime villain and what's his name, Craig Revel Hall, but he was still very much just kind of a pantomime character.
Sure.
It was just for fun. And yeah, kind of Bake Off, anyone I know who likes Bake Off kind of likes it for the reason that everyone kind of is very supportive of each other on it, and there's this just the kind of general wholesomeness.
Yeah, always
it's like
seen
a
this
Beatrix
sort of,
Potter book.
Yeah, always seeing this sort of this quaint little British show.
Yeah.
Like, the fact
it's
that
almost
it's,
racist. It's so English.
It blew up in America, which I think says a lot that people in America love watching Bake Off. There's not many British shows that do well over there, or if they do well, they take them and make them their own. Like, well, I'm sure you know The Inbetweeners being a good example of.
Oh yeah, that went well.
Yeah, completely bombed.
That went well also.
And things like The American Shameless and things like that as well.
Show.
But yeah, I mean the fact that America picked it up and people love watching it, it just shows how quintessentially British the show is. But yeah, the things you're saying about this series is almost taken away from that, from how people see it.
Yeah.
Why? I don't see much of it, admittedly, but I've sort of got this image in my head. And the things you've been saying and the things my girlfriend have been saying, it's not, doesn't
it's
seem like the
identity.
Same show.
It's losing its identity.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. But I mean, okay, just to wrap this up, if you guys were on a bake-off, say we had an office FD bake-off, which would not be a hotly contested competition.
No.
What'd you bake? What'd you go for? Do you have a specialty?
I don't bake at all.
Do you cook?
I cook.
Let's say you can cook.
I'm a limited cook as well. What do I do? I reckon I just do like a slow roast pork.
That sounds great.
It would be good.
Like pork belly?
Probably pork. Is it pork shoulder? I'm terrible with the different cuts, but yeah, slow roast pork shoulder.
That
would be
good. What do you put with it?
I would also have cauliflower cheese.
Whoa.
Just general, you'd roast the carrots obviously with it, kind of like slightly caramelized carrots.
This is excellent.
You know, obviously, right, just all the classics. Not a Yorkshire pudding though, because I'm not really big on Yorkshire puddings.
What?
But, yeah, not really big on them.
What do you mean? You're not good at making them, or you're against?
I feel like we've had this conversation before. I'm not sure when it was, but I just don't really see the point of them. Really,
I'm incredulous.
Yeah, I've never had a roast and been like, you know, what was great about that roast. That the Yorkshire pudding, you know what really stood out or what really made it great was Yorkshire pudding. I just kind of see them as a bit pointless.
I eat a roast in like, you know, some people get a fork and put a bit of everything on it.
Yeah.
I don't do that with a roast.
Not?
I eat it in reverse order of my liking.
Wow.
So I'm exactly the same. With food, not just
a
roast.
Okay.
With all food.
Me a little bit too, but I try not to because my wife laughs at me for it. But I will 100% start with the stuff that I'm like, you know, like, I like them. I like the vegetables and stuff, but, like, it's rare that I don't start with, like, the vegetables. I'm get these bastards out of the
way. If there's sprouts on my plate, I'll just get rid of the sprouts first.
Knock your sprouts down straight away.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
Then I can enjoy the rest of it.
And then you've got...
This is, like, what I used to do when I was a kid, but...
Yeah, I still do. And then you've got all the good ones. So you've got potatoes, you've got Yorkshires, you've got the meat, you've got maybe pigs in blankets, if you're
stuffing.
Lucky. Yeah, it depends on the stuffing, bro. Yeah, it depends on the stuffing. And also... Oh, God. Yeah, I just feel like that's the way you do it. And to me, like, Yorkshire puddings are always going to be there. close to the end.
Wow.
Yeah.
But then,
especially when they've soaked up all the gravy
in the title.
But that's the thing. Like you need, like, Yorkshire puddings without gravy are nothing. So surely you
agreed.
Surely you need, like, there still to be a decent amount of gravy on your plate when you go for those Yorkshire puddings, like.
Or you just get second helpings of gravy, bro.
I guess, yeah. You, I mean, if there's a lot of gravy, then that sorts out a lot of problems.
Well, I normally do gravy for the plate, and then I do a specific gravy, like, load on the Yorkshire pudding.
Into the pudding.
Okay, fair.
Yeah, which is quite dickish behaviour, but normally I make the gravy, so I'm like, I'm getting the gravy.
Yeah, if you've made enough of it, and it's
good. I make it.
I mean, I think what I'd like to do and maybe it could transform the experience of the Yorkshire pudding is get a really kind of solid Yorkshire pudding in terms of like the bowl. Do what you do, put the gravy in the middle of it, okay. Almost like a kind of bowl of gravy.
Yeah,
and then dip. You know, carrots, potatoes in the Yorkshire pudding.
That's,
I mean, that's the thing, though, isn't it? Having
and then kind of cut it open at the end. What, you know, when it's just soaked everything up and it's just this kind of pastry.
You need to go to the north a bit more because that stuff happens a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Having your massive Yorkshire pudding, like the size of a plate, and then your roast dinner is in the Yorkshire pudding.
Yeah, that's sick.
I remember, like a roast pie almost,
an open roast pie.
Yeah, I remember going on holiday with my friends to like Yorkshire when we were at uni, and we were like, let's just get a snack somewhere. And we went into a cafe, and we were like, Yorkshire pudding, like chips and sausages, cool, we'll get that. And it came out, and it was Yorkshire pudding about the size of like your face, and there were like six sausages in it. I thought it'd be like two.
Oh my days.
And it like loads of chips and then gravy, and it was sick. It was so good, and it cost about £3.50. And I was like, the North is like a magical place, except that, you know, it's a long way. What about you, Matkins? What's your go-to?
Like McCubbin, I'm a lot more MasterChef than Bake Off.
MasterChef is also excellent. Not Celebrity MasterChef, though. It's terrible.
Yeah,
Razor
Ruddock
was on that, wasn't it? That's
garbage.
Yeah. But I like my spice. I'd cook something, really? Something I've enjoyed cooking recently. I say recently, I've cooked like twice in the last year, but is sort of this rice and chicken sort of dish. I know this sounds very basic, but you fry your chicken, you fry your vegetables, so sort of your onions, your peppers, tomatoes, you sort of fry them a little bit as well.
Okay.
Chuck it all into a massive pan or into a sort of a massive tray, and then you cover it in your sort of things like chopped tomatoes, a little bit of stock in there. And then you just put all the rice in there as well.
It sounds great.
Yeah, you put all the rice in there. You add your.
This is like somewhere between like a sort of jambalaya thing and also a slightly paella.
Yeah, sort of.
But cooked in the oven instead of a dish.
Yeah, so you put all the rice in there. Obviously, it's uncooked, and then you stick it in the oven, and then the rice soaks up all the moisture from the dish.
This sounds tremendous.
That sounds great. Actually,
and then it's sort of got that sort of crispiness on top.
And when you say you like the spice, what spices are we talking?
I'll try anything. I'm going to bring her up again. My girlfriend, when she went to Mauritius and came back, she brought me back some Mauritian spice pots.
Sick.
And they are overwhelmingly spicy. Like one teaspoon could knock you out. It's that hot.
Nice.
So just put like one teaspoon, maybe two teaspoons into this. And then you just sort of let it sort of soak through the entire thing. And it's sort of, it's not, I'm just a fan of spice. Like I'd put any spice in anything, like even if I'm making beans on toast, you know, stick a bit of Tabasco in there.
The combination.
Yeah, my mate did beans. Like just a, like a breakfast, and he like spiced up the beans, and it was just like it was like a
like
epiphany.
One of the things I thought was really sort of opened my eyes. If it was like a transformative moment, it really wasn't, but it was enjoyable. And Nando's breakfast. So
I've not had one.
I've never had one.
The only time I've ever had them is when I've been in the departures lounge at Gatwick Airport.
Sure. That would be what it would happen.
And you get your full fry up, and then they ask you what heat you would like your sausage.
Nice.
Oh, damn.
Sick. Yeah. Spicy sausage is so good.
Yeah, and then so you get your fry up with your spicy sausage and their sort of take on beans, and then what I tend to do as well with the scrambled egg I get from the Nando's, put a bit of extra hot sauce on it, mix that into the eggs.
That's the best.
And then it's one.
Like your little way with rancheros or something.
Yeah, it almost seems a bit sad because it's in Gatwick Departures Lounge, but it's one of the best breakfasts. Nando's breakfast.
That's a great tip.
Gatwick Airport's good for. Good for food. To be fair, I always just go to the Wetherspoons. I'm a bit of a Wetherspoons guy.
If you ever go to Gatwick, then go to the Nando's.
I will go to the Nando's because actually, I went to the last time I was in Gatwick Airport. Brilliant. I went to the Wetherspoons, got a big veggie breakfast, and the sausages were the worst thing I've ever eaten. They were so bad. They just completely messed up.
Yeah,
is very difficult to mess up.
This is exactly what you'd expect a Nando's breakfast to be. Yeah. It's like Nando's but breakfast.
Nice. There you, you should advertise it. You should do like the TV adverts for
this
Nando's
like
breakfast.
Man.
Yeah, it's just like Nando's like, but breakfast.
That's what you are. You're like Don Draper, where he's like, "How are we going to advertise Nando's? It's Nando's, but breakfast."
Yeah, so yeah. It's exactly
with a little nice little ellipsis there as well.
Like you know, I wouldn't even have to tell you what it is beyond telling you it's a Nando's breakfast, and you know exactly how it's going to taste and how it's going to be.
I guess I'd worry there'd be chicken.
And
I love chicken, but I don't necessarily.
There can
want
be
it
depending on what you order, but it's sort of a your normal pork sausage.
Okay, good information.
What are you saying then, Pat? What's your bake off or
okay,
and
well,
or
should I actually bake something?
You've got to do the dessert.
I make good cookies.
Nice.
Like I basically learned a cookie recipe from a girlfriend when I was like 18. Since then, I've just been able to kind of like, because it was so good and basic, you could just add whatever to it or take stuff away. And so I did some tahini and chocolate chip and salt cookies the other day, which sounds wanky, but it isn't. It's just like...
What's tahini? Sorry.
It's sesame seed paste.
Okay.
So basically, it's like peanut butter, but you know the really like overwhelming, like sickly sweetness of peanut butter? It doesn't have that.
Okay.
Which is the only thing I don't like about peanut butter.
Fair.
So I was kind of like, okay, I'll give that a go. And they're really, really good. But also, I just make them sometimes with just like chocolate, nothing wanky at all. A pound cake I do. I try and put chocolate in everything because it's great. I made a chocolate mousse when I came back from Paris because I was like, I want to try and nail a chocolate mousse. But the best one I've done was probably like the worst one I had in France, which is like upsetting. But
you still take it though.
Yeah. I was still like, this is good. But
is the worst one you've had in France? Would that still be probably better than most of the ones you've had in the UK?
I must say, you don't really have chocolate mousse that much in the UK, like in a restaurant. But yeah, definitely.
I mean, yeah,
like
chocolate mousse is very much a sort of a kid's pudding in a pot sort of.
Yeah, exactly. True, actually, and in France, like the pots you get are better, but also just in a restaurant, it's genuinely like pretty much every French bistro is going to do like a mousse au chocolat, and it's going to be wild. My favorite is at a place called Chez Janou in the Marais, which is unbelievable. And there's also a place called Chocolat Chapon, which is like a little magasin where you go in and they have like bowls of different chocolate mousses made with different chocolates and different percentage cocos and like, you know, different origins.
Sick.
And you can pick one and then they put it in a paper cone and then they put a little like wafer in it and you can get like crumbled praline and stuff. Like they put all that stuff on top and you just spoon it out and it's great. And if you're in that neck of the woods as well, there's also a place where you can get cheap French pharmacy goods, which is... I like to stock up on moisturiser when I'm in Paris.
Oh, yeah.
Leave me alone.
Fair play.
But my wife's office had a bake-off last year where it was genuinely like 10 rounds and each one was themed like in the bake-off and my wife won.
10 rounds?
You must have
been an office bake-off?
Yeah, so it was one every Monday, so you'd bake something on the Sunday and bring it in.
Okay, wow. That's outrageous.
Did people get eliminated like every week?
No, everyone was just still in, and then they did a point.
Who judged that?
The
just
they had the two boss people judging it, and yeah, my wife won that, and then so she arranged one this year, but it was just like a one-off, which she did not win. But I was like, really, you should retire. Like, it's not really fair to keep on competing. You should just like should be like a horse that's won the Grand National. They're just like, no more for you.
Yeah, you never see repeat it's contestants crazy. On Bake Off.
Exactly, they never come back. The game's gone. So that's all we've got time for on the Games Gone Mad this week. Thank you very much to the two Mikes for joining me.
No problem.
We will see you next time. But before we go, don't forget that next week's episode will be the very last episode of the Games Gone Mad. We are then getting folded into Sunday Vibes Extra Time. So if you're not subscribed to that podcast, make sure you are. The Games Gone Mad format will continue to live over there. Thank you very much for listening. Bye. The Games Gone Mad.